नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नाश्नथापत्यम् एवानम् व्याधयो भिभवन्तिः एवं नियामकृद् राजन् शनैक्षेमाय कल्पते नाश्नतापत्यम् एवानम् व्याधयो भिभवन्तिः एवं नियामकृद् राजन् शनैक्षेमाय कल्पते नाश्नतापत्यम् एवानम् व्याधयो भिभवन्तिः एवं नियामकृद् राजन् शनैक्षेमाय कल्पते
Not Ashnata, those who eat Patyam, suitable, Eva, indeed, Annam, food, Vyadhaya, different types of disease, Abhibhavandi, overcome, he, indeed, evam, similarly, niyamakrit, one following regulative principles. Rajan, O King, Shanai, gradually, Shemaya, for well-being, Kalpate, becomes fit. My dear King, if a diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured, and the infection of disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses toward liberation from material contamination. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One is gradually purified if one cultivates knowledge, even through mental speculation, and strictly follows the regulative principles enjoined in the Shastras and explained in the next verse. Therefore, the platform of jnana, speculative knowledge, is better than the platform of karma, fruit of action. There is every chance of falling from the platform of karma to hellish conditions, but on the platform of jnana, one is saved from hellish life, although one is still not completely free from infection. The difficulty is that in the platform of jnana, one thinks that he has been liberated and he has become Narayan or Bhagavan. This is another phase of ignorance. Yenye ravindakshi vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya aruya krishtena parampadam tatha patyantyato nadrita yushmarangraya. Because of ignorance, one speculatively thinks himself liberated from material existence, contamination, although actually he is not. Therefore, even if one rises to Brahma Jnana, understanding of Brahman, one nevertheless falls down because he is not taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Nonetheless, jnanis at least know what is sinful and what is pious, and they very cautiously act according to the injunctions of the Shastras. Om Agyan Timidandasya Jnananjana chalakaya chakshurum bilitam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam Dadatishva padantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutha Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Bitham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi
Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Deve Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Eva Chapatitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My dear King, if a diseased person eats the pure, uncontaminated food prescribed by a physician, he is gradually cured, and the infection of disease can no longer touch him. Similarly, if one follows the regulative principles of knowledge, he gradually progresses toward liberation from material contamination. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, entitled The History of the Life of Ajamil, Text 12. Earlier in this chapter, Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring from Shukadev Goswami about how to be freed from hellish conditions of life. In the fifth canto, Shukadev Goswami described in some graphic detail the different levels of hellish existence and different ways a living entity has to suffer reactions to various type of immoral activities. Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring how to be freed from those sinful reactions. And Shukadev Goswami begins by describing according to the Dharma Shastras or Karma Kanda, how for every type of materially entangling immoral activity, there is a prayaschitta or an atonement to nullify the reactions of that sin. Parikshit Maharaj, after hearing, he respectfully reveals his own mind that this process of prayaschitta, performing some pious deed or some yajna for the purpose of neutralizing the effects of our misdeeds, it seems that as long as that desire still remains in the heart, then even after atoning, one's going to just do it again. And then one's going to atone and then do it again and atone and do it again. Just like an elephant takes bath in a river or a lake and gets very clean, then comes out and with its trunk sucks up, just starts throwing dirt all over his body, getting clean and then putting dirt on yourself. Shukadev Goswami then, in this verse, begins to describe process of jnana, which is a higher level than karma, in the sense that one, when actually understands the difference between illusion and truth, when one really deeply understands the nature of materialistic activities and how they bind one to this material world and discriminates between matter and spirit, and starts to live on the basis of that knowledge, a very pure life, a very moral life, that dissipation of ignorance actually frees one from sinful reactions. Srila Prabhupada in the purport here is explaining what Shukadeva Goswami is about to say in the next few verses. That even that is incomplete. The example is given that jnana is like when all of one's material past activities become dry leaves on the base of a tree. That means when a leaf is fresh, it can produce flowers and so many things, but when the leaves are dry and laying on the ground, they have no effect anymore. They're finished. They can easily be burned by fire. So that knowledge is like burning the dry leaves and eradicating those sins once and for all. But the problem is, as long as there's a root in the tree, more leaves are going to sprout. So he explains devotional service, how pure devotional service, following in the footsteps of great liberated devotees, can actually uproot the propensity for sinful actions. From a medical perspective, sometimes we use the analogy, if you have boils all over your body because you eat the wrong food, karma is like, karma yoga or karma kanda is like you put the compress to neutralize the boil and relieve the pain and cure that particular thing. But as long as you're still eating the wrong foods, more boils are going to come. Jnana is like, okay, I know what I'm not supposed to eat, I know what I'm not supposed to do, and I'm going to at the same time put the compresses on the boils. But if you still have a disease in the blood, it's just a matter of time till it's going to happen. Another boil. Bhakti is dealing with the root cause. The root cause is forgetfulness of our true nature. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, that we're eternal servants of the Lord. And to act accordingly. And Srila Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada, in a future purport of this chapter, goes into beautiful detail. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmani anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktaruttama. That pure devotional service is untinged by either desire for fruit of results, karma, or even the desire for liberation through mental speculation, jnana, or even without a desire for mystic cities or powers. Pure devotional service is favorable service rendered to Krishna. Sam siddhir haritoshanam, simply for his satisfaction. And the power of pure devotional service, Prabhupada quotes Rupa Goswami, that there are different stages of sinful reactions. Primarily, prarabdha and aprarabdha. Prarabdha means the manifested reactions to bad karma. we may be suffering in different ways, born in a certain ways, mental suffering, physical suffering. These are the reactions that are fructified. But then there's this aprarabdha, the unmanifested. That means there's a storage of these bijas, or these seeds of sinful reactions within the heart, just waiting to fructify. Whatever we do, whatever we say, there will be a reaction. Sometimes we think why good people are suffering and why apparently bad people are so happy and prosperous. And sometimes seeing this phenomena, people lose their faith. And really, what are we talking about? It just doesn't make sense. But I remember years ago hearing from a sage that karma is very inconceivable, but it's very exact. Something like the silo of grains. One person may have put really, really good grains in a silo for many months, but then later on decides, you know, what do I care if I cheat people? Now I'm going to put really bad grains in the silo. So you take the grains out from the bottom. So that person who is getting good grains out now, who's getting prosperous karma now, that's due to his past. But it's just a matter of time till that's going to be exhausted and all that's going to come out is all the bad grains. And similarly, a person may have put a lot of bad grains in the silo for many months and then realizes, actually, I'm really suffering. I'm going to start putting good grains in. So the bad grains are still coming out, but the future is going to be very prosperous. So similarly, a person may have done good things in the past, but's doing bad now. It's just a matter of time till that negative karma is going to be there, manifested. And vice versa, aprarabdha. That means sinful reactions that are dormant, just waiting to sprout. May happen in this life, may happen in the next life, but it will happen. Now, the most implicated and complicated and serious matter about when we engage in immoral activities is this kutam, which means the seed of the inclination for that action grows every time. It's like an example. Every time a person smokes a cigarette, not only are they harming their health, but with every cigarette, their propensity to smoke increases more and more and more. Every time we engage in sinful activities or improper sensual activities, not only is the karma stored and eventually going to be manifested, but the propensity to do that thing is nourished, strengthens, and becomes stronger. And that's really the most critical problem. And that's what Parikshit Maharaj is asking about. One engages in improper actions, one atones for it, one even has knowledge of how to act in such a way not to be implicated by it, but the seed desire to enjoy it is still in the heart. And every now and then, it's going to howl and dictate for us to surrender. Ravana. He had 10 arms and 10 heads. Ravana really represents selfish, lustful propensities. He stole Sita, Ram's own consort, the goddess of fortune, to enjoy for himself. And actually, everything within this creation is an expansion of the energy of Sita, or the goddess of fortune. And it's all meant, Sita's energy, it's all meant for the service and the pleasure of Ram. But when we take the things of this world and try to separate it from the service of Ram to use for our own selfish enjoyment, it's the mode of Ravana. Maybe not as cruel and extreme, but it's that same basic ignorance. So in Sri Lanka, when this battle was going on, Ravana was fighting with Ram, and Ram kept with his arrows. He'd shoot, and Ravana's head would fall off. He was cutting off all 10 of his heads. But as soon as he did it, another head would grow. Another head would grow. Another head would grow. And Ravan was just head after head, arm after arm, and they kept growing back. And then Vibhishan told him, Ravana's brother, he knew the secret. He said, Ravana has a type of nectar in his heart that he got as a benediction from Brahma and the gods. And as long as that nectar is in his hearts, whatever limbs you cut off is just going to keep growing back unlimitedly. You have to dry the nectar. You have to shoot an arrow right in his heart. And interestingly, Ram, just before Sita was kidnapped, near Nasik or Panchavati, he met Agastya Muni. And Agastya Muni gave him a special arrow, which was a blessing of a great sage. And he told him the power of this arrow. So Ram took that arrow with the mantra given to him by Agastya Muni. And he used that. It was really effulgent. He drew it from his bow and released it. It soared through the air. It illuminated the sky. Right into the heart of Ravana. And it dried up all the nectar. And from all of Ravana's 10 mouths, he vomited blood. And then he screamed and fell to the ground, finished. So Ram was teaching us a good lesson in this Leela. That through our atonements, through our knowledge, through our tapasyas, our austerities, we can cut off the heads of our lust and envy and anger and arrogance and greed and illusion. But as long as that bijam and that kutam, that seed of desire for enjoyment, is within our heart, it's just a matter of time till those heads manifest themselves again. Do any of you have that experience? We really do the right thing, we restrain ourselves, and we really think we're making advancement, and still there. I thought you were gone. Sometimes there's propensities from 30, 40 years before. Mm-hmm. Only through pure devotional service can we actually dry up that propensity. You see, Ram shot that arrow into Ravana's heart. Bhakti is about the heart. It's about actually cleansing the heart. Vishayavanivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarajamarasopyasya param drisvanivartate. Krishna tells in the Bhagavad Gita that one could restrain the mind and the senses from activities, but once it's just a matter of time till one does it again, because that propensity is there. The solution, Krishna says, is when we experience a higher taste. We're no longer concerned. Srila Prabhupada says that if you give somebody halava, then they're not going to be so... If all they know in life is eating just some dry leaves, they become very addicted to dry leaves. But if you give them halava, they lose their interest in dry leaves. We're looking for that higher taste. Om apavitra pavitro va sarvavastam gatopiva yasmaret pundarikaksham sapa yapyantarab suchi. Whether one is purified or unpurified, or even having passed through all situations of life, one who remembers the beautiful lotus-eyed supreme personality of Godhead is purified both within and without. Krishna is such a supremely important name of God because Krishna means all attractive. Rama means the reservoir of all pleasure. To the degree we actually understand Krishna, we realize Krishna, to that degree, the things of this world, we lose our propensity for them because there's something so much higher, something that never ends. Srila Prabhupada quotes Yamunacharya. He says, in a beautiful prayer where essentially he's saying, I spent my life addicted to materialistic activities and sense enjoyment and sexual pleasures. But now that I've tasted the sweetness of Krishna, the sweetness of loving devotion to Krishna, when I think of those things, my lips curl in distaste, and Prabhupada says, I spite at the thought. Sri Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada quotes this beautiful verse. He says, if you are attached to all of these mundane things, sensual pleasures and society, family and love on the material platform, I warn you, do not go to Keshi Ghat on Bank of Yamuna. Because if you go, you will see Govinda standing in his beautiful threefold form, playing on his flute, with his eyes like blooming lotus petals, his hair circling his moon-like face. Beautiful, beautiful hair. And his neck with three lines like a conch shell. And his complexion like a freshly formed monsoon rain cloud. And his lips like bimba fruit, beaming in the moonlight. When you see this beautiful form, you become so attracted that temporary, mundane activities lose their charm. because we are charmed by Krishna. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that all the opulence and attractive things in this entire creation are but a single spark of my splendor. I heard a story of Srila Prabhupada here in Los Angeles. He was taking a walk on Venice Beach with some of his disciples. There was a beautiful sunset. They said, "Prabhupada, isn't this sunset beautiful?" And Prabhupada smiled and said, "Yes, it is. But if you think the sunset's beautiful, if you think the art is beautiful, you should see the artist." Om Purnamada Purnamidam. The Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and everything emanating from the Absolute is perfect and complete because everything is connected to Krishna. If we really want to enjoy to the highest eternal degree, even material nature, when we see it in relation to Krishna, it awakens our love. I believe it was right upstairs in this temple where someone asked Srila Prabhupada, "How do we see Krishna in everything?" Because Krishna says in the Gita, "For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, that person is never lost, nor is that person, nor am I ever lost to that person." So Krishna says like that, how do we actually see Krishna in everything? Srila Prabhupada pointed to his glasses. In India, they call them spectacles. One time I was giving class to many, many people. It was a Pandal program. And I was giving a Bhagavatam class. And the lights were really dim, so I asked someone to bring my glasses. And they brought a glass of water. So then I asked somebody else to bring my glasses. And they brought another glass of water. I said, "Can you get my glasses?" They said, "You have two glasses already." They thought when I said glasses, it means I wanted plural glasses. I said, no, for my eyes. They said, "Oh, you mean spectacles." I said, yes. So we have to be very careful about time, place, and circumstance. So Prabhupada pointed to his spectacles and said, "What do you think of when you see these spectacles?" And the devotee said, "I think these are Prabhupada's spectacles." He said, "So you are seeing me in the glasses. You are remembering me." Similarly, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of Krishna. Everything is Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Everything is emanating from Krishna. So a devotee in love with Krishna, everything he or she sees reminds him of Krishna. And one feels the love of Krishna. And one actually sees the real beauty in the thing. Everything is sacred when we see its relationship with Krishna. Everyone is sacred. Vidyavanaya sampani brahmani kabihastini suni chaiva sopake cha pandita samadarshana. Krishna tells in the Gita that one who is actually learned sees every living being with equal vision because they see that I am within the heart of everyone. Mamayavamsa jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. Every living being is part of me. And this whole material nature is a manifestation originating in me. Srila Prabhupada explains that bhakti is the art of transforming material energy into spiritual by seeing its relationship with Krishna and acting accordingly. This microphone, is it material or spiritual? It's potentially spiritual. If we see that it can be utilized for the pleasure of God, to uplift other living beings, to bring them closer to Krishna, then we're seeing the spiritual essence. We're seeing the spiritual nature within it. Maya means that which is not. When we just don't see how this is coming from Krishna and it's for Krishna, then we're just not seeing it as it is. And in that forgetfulness of who we really are and who Krishna really is, then we use it for our own selfish purposes. And that's the cause of all these good and bad karmas. Sarva dharman parityasya mame kam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papevyo moksha yishami masucha. Bhakti is to surrender to the Lord. And when we surrender by simply recognizing that I am your eternal servant and everything's for you, then we are freed from all types of sinful reactions, and even all types of pious reactions, all types of material reactions. And Shukadev Goswami is declaring in this beautiful chapter how that Krishna, who is like the sun, is none different than his name. Krishna Surya Samayohaya Andhakar. Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami that Krishna is like the sun, and Maya or ignorance is like darkness. In the presence of the sun, darkness is automatically dispelled. Similarly, when Krishna appears within our heart, all ignorance and all the inclinations that is incited by ignorance is removed. And we're liberated. The highest liberation is prema, where our heart is so filled with love for God. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam. The second chapter of Gita, Krishna says, just like the ocean is not really affected by rain or storms or even tornadoes or hurricanes or whether rivers are coming in the monsoons really full or whether during the dry season they're dried up, because the ocean is so full in itself, whatever may happen doesn't really affect the depth of the ocean. When we're on the surface, we're affected by everything. But when we go deep down, unaffected. So similarly, when we actually experience the depth of the pleasure, anandamayobhyashat, of Krishna, the all-attractive one, and the sweetness of service to Krishna, yegatamam prapadyante, Krishna reciprocates according to the sincerity of our devotion. Then we deal with this world, but at the same time, our experience is so deep and so full, it's not affected by it. And that same all-beautiful, all-attractive Krishna, who is Bhagavan, the complete whole in the source of all beauty, strength, knowledge, fame, wealth and renunciation. That Krishna has appeared within the name Nama Chintamani Chit Krishna's Chaitanya Rasvigra. So by learning how to properly chant the holy name of the Lord, which is the very foundational basis of bhakti in this age, one can actually solve the problem of suffering through tasting the sweetness of prema or love. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was the greatest jnani alive. He was a very moral and pious man, extremely highly cultured, so learned in the scriptures that even sannyasis and scholars from all over India were coming to study under him. He was living in Navadvip. He really was one of the great people who made Navadvip famous. It's explained that Navadvip had perfected all the six darshans of Indian philosophy, except they couldn't teach Nyaya. Because the only scripture was in Mithila. So people had to go there. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went there and he learned it, but his intellect was so brilliant that he perfectly memorized the entire scripture, came back to Navadvip and wrote it down perfectly. From that point on, Navadvip was the ultimate seat of learning because all the systems of philosophy could be taught and learned there. And the king of Orissa, Prataparudra, understood the magnitude of this man's intelligence and invited him to be the guru, practically the scholar for the whole kingdom. And he went there. And of course we know the long story, how Lord Chaitanya ended up in his house in the ecstasy of love of God, unconscious. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to serve him. He was trying to help him. And when the devotees came and chanted loudly, Lord Chaitanya came up. And Sarvabhauma was very worried about him. He said to Lord Chaitanya that, you are only 24 years old and you're so beautiful. How are you going to follow all these regulative principles of a sannyasi? You should study Vedanta from me. Only then is it possible, when you are fully convinced within your intellect of the difference between matter and spirit, between Maya and truth, Brahman. And Gopinathacharya, the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma, was really angry. He was getting in debates with him. Who are you? Sri Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of God, and he doesn't need to learn from you. You want to elevate him? Who are you to elevate God? And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, why do you expect me to believe he's God? According to the Shastra, I don't find that he's God. And Gopinathacharya and him were having a debate, and Gopinathacharya finally said, because one can only understand who God is when one is touched by the grace of God. But because you have no blessings, you are just like a dry, tasteless rice cake with all your philosophical speculation. Therefore, you cannot see the Supreme Lord when he's standing right in front of you. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, we're just having a friendly debate. Don't get so upset. And even after that, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I want to protect you. I'll teach you. Be my student. And Lord Chaitanya was so humble. He said, yes, please protect me. He said, I accept you as my guru. I'm your disciple. Please instruct me and teach me how I can maintain my vows. And he sat and listened to Sarvabhauma for 7 days in the Jagannath temple as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was speaking total Mayavad philosophy. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just respectfully listened. And after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, you haven't said a word. I don't know if you understand or don't understand. And Lord Chaitanya says, I understand Vedanta sutras very, it's as clear as the noonday sun. But the Lord very respectfully, he said, but your explanation is like a dark cloud that completely obscures the sun. But by this time, Lord Chaitanya completely, by his humility and his respectfulness, conquered the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And by listening to him, ultimately, Sarvabhauma felt obliged. Well, then you tell me what your explanation. And Lord Chaitanya told him. And Sarvabhauma became a devotee, a great devotee. And one day, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of the 9 processes of devotional service, which is most important? And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Kirtanam, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. all the other eight processes of devotional service can be perfectly fulfilled simply by sincerely chanting the holy names. Because Krishna is none different than his name. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. Krishna has incarnated within his name in this age of Kali. Beautiful. And the other great Mayavadi was Prakashananda Saraswati. He was really blasting away at Lord Chaitanya, saying he was just a crazy sentimentalist, associating with materialistic people, and he wasn't associating with real sannyasis studying Vedanta, therefore he was useless, he was spreading irreligion. And Lord Chaitanya was invited to meet him in the top Mayavadi sannyasis. And Lord Chaitanya sat where they all washed their feet. And Prakashananda saw that, and he saw the beauty of the Lord's effulgence. He said, come, why? He became charmed by his humility and his beauty and his respectfulness. He says, why are you sitting there? Are you in some despondent state of mind? And Lord Chaitanya said, I'm not fit to sit with all of you. You are great scholars. This is where I should be sitting. And that charmed everyone's hearts. And Prakashananda came down and picked him up. And Prabhupada says that was Agyata Sukriti. Somehow or other, by Lord Chaitanya's respect and humility toward him, he attracted him to render service with affection. And then his heart was receptive. And he asked, why are you not with us studying? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my guru said, I'm not qualified to study Vedanta. I'll never understand it. I should just chant the holy names. And he gave me this verse. Haranama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Steva, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatiranyata. In this age of Kali, only the holy names can bring about that highest revelation of love of God. So I started chanting. And some really strange things started happening. Tears were coming out of my eyes, and my hairs were standing on end, and my limbs were trembling. And I went back to my guru and said, what's happening to me? And my guru said, I congratulate you, my son. You have attained perfection, love of God. Now spread this holy name all over the world. And then they talked Vedanta philosophy, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu completely convinced them. And they were all transformed. This is the power of the holy name. And here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're going to find Shukadev Goswami's culminated answer to Parikshit Maharaj's question. How to be free from the propensity for selfish materialistic activities which incriminates us in karma. By reconnecting with Krishna, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through the chanting of his holy names. And he's about to tell the story of Ajamil, who really, he really made a mess of his life. There was a stock of so much bad stuff that he had to pay the consequences for. And as he was about to die, he saw the Yamadutas coming to drag him off. But he chanted the name of his son, Narayan. And he did it without an offensive mentality. And just by that one recitation, offenseless recitation of the Lord's name, he was delivered. The Vishnu Dutas came and told the Yama Dutas, you can't take this person. The Yama Dutas went back to Yamaraj. How could anyone be more powerful than you to stop us? And Yamaraj said, don't you ever even look at the face of anyone who has sincerely chanted the names of Hari, because Hari is there to protect them. So this higher taste, Rupa Goswami describes what the experience he has when he chants Krishna's names. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the name of Krishna dances on my tongue, I desire many, many, many tongues. How many of us feel like that? And when that name enters into my ear, I desire millions and millions and millions of ears to drink the nectar of that name. And when it enters into my heart, it conquers my life. That is the power of the name. It's all attractive. Nam namakari bahuta nija sarva shaktis. All the beauty, all the sweetness, all the power, all the grace, all the leelas, the abode of the Lord, everything is within the name. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us the simple formula by which we can access the full potencies of the name. Trinarabhi sunichena taror ibasi hishnuna. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. When we really strive to be humble like a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, when we're eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return, Krishna reveals himself with all of his opulences within his name, and then we naturally want to chant constantly. Is there any questions or comments? Yes. This was Srila Prabhupada. When he came to the West, he told us that he didn't have any money, he didn't have any contacts. He had two things. He had his books in a crate, and he had faith in the order of his guru and in the power of the holy name. And Prabhupada knew with complete conviction that if these people just take the name of Krishna, the doors to the spiritual world will open for them, whoever they are. Dina hina yata chilo harinama udharilo tarasakshi jagai madhai. The testimony of the power of the holy name is how it even purified all the sins and delivered Jagai and Madhai. And whatever bad things any of us have done in the past is insignificant, not even a drop in the ocean of what Jagai and Madhai did. Chitragupta, who was the account keeper for Yamaraj, he has no problems calculating and keeping an account of what we've done as far as our immoral acts. But Jagai and Madhai, he had a whole department just trying to keep up, and they couldn't. They were working overtime. But just by giving up those activities and with a humble state of mind, chanting the holy names, in just a matter of moments, it was all gone. All that was left was their desire for pure devotional service. Prabhupada had that faith. And he had the compassion to sacrifice everything to give us the chance to chant the holy names and become perfect. That is our gratitude. Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for a perfect class. I've had the opportunity to have such nice association and have so many wonderful experiences in Krishna consciousness when the holy name is very attractive, and you know, we feel very enlivened and empowered in our devotional service. And then times, you know, you become covered over by the modes of nature, and things become, you know, gray and foggy, and then that taste isn't there. And so often other things become the priority because of needing to maintain material existence. There's always work to be done or something to do. And the prioritization of that chanting and associating process becomes distracted. And I'm just wondering how the process works, in that it seems as if in order to chant there has to be so much material arrangement. But often I hear that the opposite is the truth. If you just chant, that the material arrangement will fit. So I'm just trying to find out what's the linchpin in my, you know, misunderstanding on how to chant and to fully take shelter.
There's only one consideration. That's our sincerity. That's all. Prabhupada pleaded us, just be sincere. And this is a test. Are we actually sincere? Anyone can say or say not, but are we sincere? If we're really sincere, then in whatever situation, we'll take shelter of the holy name. Where in the scriptures does it say you need material arrangements? It's exactly the opposite of what you're saying. It says there's no material qualification or disqualification required. Whether you're in perfect health or whether you're on your deathbed. Whether you're being praised and glorified by millions or whether you're being blasphemed and criticized. Whether you're wealthy or in poverty. In our scriptures, there's examples of all these things. When Lord Chaitanya used to cite the verses of the Avanti Brahman, who was totally destitute of anything, but in that state, he took shelter. And King Pratapa, he wanted to renounce everything, and they said, no, no, be the king. But he took shelter. So as long as we're waiting for a material adjustment for us to actually take shelter of the holy name, birth after birth after birth, we're just going to keep waiting. We're going to be infatuated by when things go well, and we're going to be depressed when things don't go well. So yes, we have to strive to make ends meet and to do the best we can in this material world. Srila Prabhupada taught us we have to be responsible in our life. But in whatever situation, we can't wait. If we're sincere in whatever situation, whether we're struggling and not really doing very well, or whether everything is flourishing on a material platform, if we're sincere, we're going to be taking shelter of the importance of chanting the holy names. And if we can't do it when we're down and out, we're not going to be able to do it when everything's right. And if we can't do it when everything's right, we're probably not going to be able to do it when we're down and out. We have to learn to do it, irrespective of the material conditions. This is Maya telling us to procrastinate. Things aren't right yet, so how can you do your sadhana? Things aren't right yet, and they're never going to be right. Birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. Simultaneously, they're always perfectly right. And if we're sincere, we'll see that. Does that answer your question?
So, for example...
Be real quick, because I have to go. Because okay. Your questions are classes in themselves.
Sorry.
Sorry, with all love and respect, I'm just, I have to, appointment. Yes, what is?
So just, for example, if there are things that are pressing, if I just prioritize my sadhana, then those things will be rectified in the later on.
Your consciousness will be rectified. The real problems, according to Gita, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, doshana, that the real problems are birth, old age, disease, and death. Now the body's going to die no matter whether you chant 64 rounds a day or whether you don't chant at all. Right? The body's going to die. So can you solve the problem of physical death? No. But you can solve the problem of death by realizing you're not this body by chanting and realizing you're the eternal soul and there is no death. Yes? So the chanting of the holy names is not meant to solve material problems. The chanting of the holy names is meant to transcend all these material problems. We do our best to deal with the material problems. We try to solve them. But our chanting is actually to bring us to the transcendental state of solving the real problems of life. And this is what we learn from the greatest sages. Haridas Thakur, he said, the purpose of chanting the holy name is not to improve our material life and not even to get mystic cities and not even to get liberation. The purpose of chanting the holy name is to awaken the love of God. So if we're chanting because we think that this will solve my material problems, it may or may not solve your material problems. But the real problem is suffering, birth, old age, disease, and death. And the chanting of the holy name will, if we are sincere, awaken that prema within us and the realization of our eternal soul. And that's the only real solution. Yes? So don't let Maya cheat us by thinking, well, chant and things will get material better and then I'll be in a more opportune situation to chant. Yes? Because what we see is sometimes the more successful you are, the more you become a prisoner of your success. And once you start progressing, sometimes you have to work 10 times even harder just to maintain what you have. The material world is a very complex place. So whether we're a king like Prataparudra, or whether we're like Kuldavecha Sridhar, doesn't really make that much difference. We try our best. But if we're sincere in whatever situation, in whatever stage, we'll try to find Krishna in his holy name, and Krishna will reveal himself. That's why Srila Prabhupada emphasized there's no material qualification or disqualification to become a perfect devotee and chant the holy names. All that's required is our sincerity. In every moment, whatever situation we're in is the perfect opportunity if we just have that sincerity to do it. At the same time, we have to be responsible. When Prabhupada was in his grihastha life, he was very responsible. He opened a shop in Allahabad, and then he had to open a shop in Bombay, and sometimes he had a shop in Calcutta. He was working very hard for his domestic responsibilities. But he was always immersed in Krishna, chanting the holy names, meditating on the mission of his guru. He said he can't remember ever forgetting Krishna. Yes? So he taught us how to be responsible but fully Krishna conscious. Not using material situations as excuses. Because no matter what you do or how successful you are, Maya will always provide the same power of excuses. Yes? It just comes in different dresses. But there's always something else I have to accomplish before things are right. Yes? Like Kailash. You know that story. He was always telling his guru Narada, I just have to get this done. I just have to do this. Then I'll take it seriously. I just one more thing. I'm almost there. Just this. The present moment is the perfect opportunity. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.